Resentment for Alex Braun deepened with each passing year. They were the media's golden couple, constantly photographed together at hockey games and charity events. Paparazzi hiding in palm trees even caught shots of them stealing relaxing moments at a tropical resort in the Caribbean. Fucking annoying is what it was, especially because the closest thing I've ever had to a tropical vacation was that time I took a wrong turn on the interstate and ended up on Long Island. And now I'm here, at Elite Airlines Stadium, about to come face to face with Eden Wynn again. I don't follow the news coverage of her these days like I used to, but I know she and Braun broke up, that her grandfather died, and she's now the owner of the Boston Titans. Her high-profile job means she's attracted some enemies, and it's going to be my job to protect her. Time will tell if I can do that without losing a piece of myself again. 6 years is a long time. I should have been more prepared. But maybe you never fully get over the one who got away. Maybe there will always be some small part of me that wonders, what if? And when I enter Eden's office, my first thought is not a very professional one. Holy hell, I want to bite into her like a cookie. My greedy eyes drink her in, from her long dark blonde hair that curls slightly at the ends, to her killer figure encased in a simple black pencil skirt and a silk top. Her eyes are as blue as I remember, but they seem deeper, wiser somehow. I guess that makes sense. She's been through some shit since I last saw her, losing her grandfather and enduring a very public breakup. Things like that can take a toll on a person. Miss Wynn, I tip my chin in her direction, keeping my expression cool. A smile lifts her full mouth.
Really, Holt? I think we're beyond last names at this point, don't you?
I return her easy smile, pretending I'm not basically losing my shit right now. I don't know. It's been a minute.
A minute? Or 5 years?
Six, I say, correcting her. Shit, I sound like I'm keeping score, and I guess I am. Eden's smile widens a little more at my admission.
You're right. But at any rate, call me Eden.
Of course, I say. And then my next thought manages to slip out. It's good to see you again. She motions me over to the empty chair at the conference table in front of the floor-to-ceiling glass windows in her office. There's no handshake or friendly hug, and I'm grateful for that, because while I'm holding it together, I don't know how I'd manage touching her. The older guy seated at the table in her office has been watching our interaction with an amused expression.
You two know each other?
He asks when I sit down. Eden lowers herself into the chair across from me.
We go back a ways, since college.
Sutton? The guy asks.
That's the place. I nod. Holt Rossi, it's nice to meet you.
He grins in my direction.
Les, good to meet you too. I was worried you were going to have your hands full with Eden. She didn't want extra security brought in, but seems like with you two being old friends, maybe this will work out after all.
Eden chuckles.
Never discount my ability to be a pain in the ass, Les. I'm sure Holt will still have his hands full with me soon enough.
A man can hope. I clear my throat. Should we begin? You can fill me in on the current security staff roles and responsibilities. Any gaps or shortcomings you've noticed? Eden straightens her spine and places her elbows on the table. She's all business now, and the playful side of her I glimpsed when I walked in is gone. I'll be honest, though. This side of her is every bit as hot. Be professional, I remind myself. I'm here to do a job.
We employ the usual security staff of a professional hockey team,
Eden says.
We have a director of security who oversees the department, which includes 7 full-time security personnel, a couple dozen public safety officers who work the parking lots and perimeter on game days, and event security who enforce the rules for ice access, making sure no one approaches the players or locker rooms. Then we have technical staff who monitor our security systems and cameras. Everything is top of the line.
She pauses, smiling as she meets my eyes.
I've learned a lot these past couple of months.
Since her grandfather died, I assume she means. She's had to jump in with both feet. Sounds like you've got a handle on it, but now you're looking for some extra help. A contract position to keep Miss Wynn Eden safe? Man, it feels weird having her name in my mouth after all these years. Les nods.
Some extra help, yes. She's young, single, and she's become somewhat of a controversial figure.
Any credible threats? I ask, my stomach tightening. Emails, phone calls?
No, nothing like that.
Les shakes his head.
A few angry fans, comments on blog posts, things like that.
Keyboard warriors,
Eden says flatly. Les clears his throat, directing his attention back to me.
This is all just a precaution. It's what Pete would have wanted.
I look to Eden. My condolences about your grandfather. Of course he'd want you to be safe. After Eden gives me a sad smile, I continue. I started my company 4 years ago. Before that, I worked in private security, learning the industry. We're small, only 4 employees right now, plus myself, but I trust the guys I have completely. We'd be at your beck and call, day or night.
I don't miss the way Eden's gaze lingers on my mouth as I speak. Focus, Rossi.
Les fills me in on the boycott of Eden when she was announced as team owner, a couple of small protests that really don't sound like they amounted to much. But still, he's right to take precautions. You really can't be too careful. I nod along. It reminds me of the same thing that happened years ago when a 90-year-old grandmother took over a professional football team. That didn't go over well either.
The fans can be pretty protective of their team,
Les says.
Misogynistic is the word I think you're looking for, Les.
Eden's lips lift into a smirk at him before she turns those baby blues on me again.
And you're prepared to take on another contract? I travel with the team sometimes.
I nod. Yes. And my staff can provide backup if I can't be somewhere, or if we need to secure multiple locations. We're trained in everything from how to handle a medical emergency to disarming a threat, dealing with atmospheric conditions, and taking care of special needs for female clients.
So you'd carry her tampons and warn her if there was a thunderstorm coming?
Les says with a chuckle. Eden lifts her brows at me as she waits for my response. No. I'm pretty sure Eden can carry her own hygiene products, and that she's more than capable of interpreting her weather app. It's more about protecting our female clients from unwanted male attention, sexual advances, or even assault. And when I say atmospheric conditions, what I mean is when a person is outside of their normal environment, it can create issues if the individual isn't accustomed to the altitude, humidity, even jet lag due to changing time zones. All of these factors can cause a person's critical thinking skills and physical performance to suffer, making them a more vulnerable target. We're trained to keep an eye on things like that. Les nods thoughtfully.
I see.
Most people have no idea what security guards do. It's a lot more than just watching for bad guys and talking into walkie-talkies. Although the walkie-talkies are pretty cool.
Sounds like a plan to me, son. We could use the peace of mind that our fearless leader here is safe.
Les stands up and extends his hand toward me.
I have to get going. My wife has me trying this new thing, couples yoga. Says I need to open up more, find my inner balance.
He rolls his eyes. I return his handshake. Enjoy, sir. And then Les is gone, leaving Eden and me alone together in her office. I try to keep my gaze on hers. I certainly can't let it stray to check out her tits like I want to. It's surreal to be sitting across from her after all these years. Unable to take the silence, I pull a business card from my pocket. If at any time you feel unsafe, this is my personal cell number. She takes the card and sets it on the table in front of her, frowning as she stares down at it for a moment.
Les is right. Everything you've said sounds good.
But? She looks up and smiles.
But, I don't know. Isn't this going to be weird? Shouldn't we talk about things?
Things? I raise an eyebrow.
Our past,
she says to clarify, tucking her long hair behind one ear. My heart rate jumps. It's really not much of a past. It was a one time. I can't help my mind from flashing back to that night in my room. The way she kissed me. The soft moans of pleasure she made when my mouth latched onto her. Eden holds up a hand, jolting me out of my memory.
I know. And I just left. You probably wondered what happened, why I...
Fuck yeah, I wondered. I've done nothing but wonder for 6 long years. But I shrug, trying to act as casual as she seems to be about this whole thing. I get it. I was a temporary stop, Princess. What's done is done. You don't have to try to make me feel better about it. She flinches at my use of the word princess. Shit, I don't mean to be an asshole. I guess it just comes naturally for me. Sitting up straighter, she says.
But I...
I lean back, feigning a casual posture as I interrupt her. It's in the past. Let's move on.
Okay,
she says softly.
I can do that if you can.
I'm a professional. Her lips tilt up in a smile again, and her gaze roams briefly across the expanse of my shoulders and the athletic black knit polo I'm wearing with my company's logo over my left pec.
I can see that.
Chapter 5. Eden. I wasn't much more than knee-high when Grandpa Pete bought the Boston Titans. One of my earliest memories is walking into the stadium hand-in-hand with him the day he signed the papers. From that day forward, hockey and the Wynn family have been intertwined, and Elite Airlines Stadium has become like a second home to me. A different company had the naming rights back then, back when the Boston Titans were claiming regular championship titles. There were more than a few legendary games in those years, or so I'm told. As I got older, I was always much more interested in the catering options than the score. That and the fact that having access to the owner's box of a nationally acclaimed hockey team made me popular with the boys at my prep school, regardless of whether I watched the games or not. But all that changed when I started dating Alex. When the man you love is at risk of getting his teeth knocked in, you learn to keep your eyes on the ice. Falling in love with the game was merely a lucky side effect. I came to crave the smell of the stadium, that musky mix of icy air and sweat, and even the hollow feeling of a loss was better than not watching a game at all. I guess I'll always have Alex to thank for that, although I'd rather not give him credit for any part of my life. Not since he walked out of it in favor of sowing his wild oats. Now, less than 6 short months after he broke my heart, I'm watching Alex Braun play once again, but not from the stands like I used to. Now I have a view from the ice, and my eyes are locked on him for a whole new reason. I may have lost my girlfriend title, but I've swapped it out for a new one. Boss. A drastic upgrade, if I do say so myself.
2-on-1, boys, do it again.
Coach Wilder's gruff, commanding voice barks from beside me. I watch as the players glide to their marks, running through the mechanics of the drill. But it's just that, mechanical. Unnatural, even. Like they're 6 separate units going through the motions instead of one cohesive team. When Reeves, our left wing, weaves down the ice, Alex shoulders into him at full speed, which earns him a shove up against the boards. I wince at the hollow thud, turning toward Coach Wilder, who looks rightfully frustrated, if not a little pissed off. Something tells me this isn't the first time this has happened today. My eyes narrow as I watch. Bax, one of our best right wingers, rushes down the ice and comes up fast behind Alex, who struggles to maintain possession of the puck. It's sloppy, not at all like Alex to be so unsteady on his skates. He skids to a jarring stop in front of the crease without completing the pass. Sweat plasters Alex's hair to his forehead under the helmet, and his chest rises and falls with quick breaths. His smile is crooked and lazy, and most times easy. But today it's nowhere to be seen. He doesn't look particularly pleased to be appraised by his ex-turned-boss. But that's exactly what this is, an appraisal. And I don't miss a thing. The way his gloved hands shake, the uncertainty in his eyes as he scans the ice. I know Alex possibly better than anyone, and right now I know he's not very happy. The last several years floated by with Alex by my side. After college, we became one, me working part-time and taking graduate-level courses in whatever city he was playing for at the time, and Alex playing his heart out to become one of the best young forwards in the league. Salt Lake City, Toronto for a season, New York for another. We strolled along the city streets, window shopping and daydreaming together about our future. We ate our meals at the little dining table I moved with us from city to city, and we made love regularly and enthusiastically. We were young, happy, and in his case, very talented with a hockey stick, and nothing could stop us. On the nights he was home, I cooked while Alex sat on a stool in the kitchen, watching his game day videos and critiquing his performance. I always encouraged him, and he would listen to me talk about whatever my latest pet project was. When we lived in Toronto, it was volunteering once a week at a women's shelter. In New York, I became interested in running and joined a running club, though we moved away before I had the chance to compete with my group in the half marathon we'd been training for. The off-season was spent near family or vacationing someplace warm. Summer gave way to fall, and winter rolled in. Our months together turned into years as Alex and I built a life together. What we had worked. At least, until it didn't. I'd like to tell you there was a moment, a distinct time or event that made everything fall apart. But it wasn't as simple as that. While Alex traveled with the team in New York, I began spending time with my grandpa in Boston, learning the business of running a sports franchise. That was when Alex and I started to drift apart. Things were changing. He'd still sit with me while I cooked, but he seemed more withdrawn. He didn't ask me questions about my day anymore, and when I wanted to tell him all the things I was learning from Grandpa Pete, Alex seemed far away and distant. Our sex life, which had always been regular and fulfilling, became infrequent and less satisfying. Late at night, I'd try to talk to Alex, ask if there was something bothering him, but he'd only turn his back to me in bed, saying that he was tired. I worried he was cheating on me. It had to be the only explanation for this new distance growing between us, but I could find no evidence of that. Still, I worried because I often heard rumors about professional athletes having a different girl in every city, and I was terrified of losing him. We fought sometimes. I accused Alex of being with someone else, and he accused me of being insecure. But I was desperate to know if he had someone on the side and what she was like because I wanted to be like her, wanted to feel like I was still enough for him, even though I knew I no longer was. Finally, when I couldn't take Alex's chilly indifference toward me any longer, I confronted him. He'd just returned from a 3-day road trip to the Midwest. I'd cooked his favorite dinner, steak and garlic bread. We sat calmly at the dining table talking about his win over Cleveland, but inside I was so nervous I was shaking. I was terrified we'd reached the end of our relationship, and I wanted desperately to hit rewind and go all the way back to the beginning when I was sure Alex loved me. I started off carefully, tiptoeing around the subject of where we now stood. We felt more like roommates than lovers, and while I'd once been certain we were heading toward an engagement and marriage, now those things seemed oceans away. Looking nervous, Alex dropped his head into his hands. His refusal to meet my eyes made my stomach drop. "Is there someone else?" I asked, blood pounding in my ears.
"No,"
he croaked. It was of little consolation because even if it were true, I could feel the years of love between us crumbling as surely as a child's sandcastle in the waves. "Talk to me," I begged, tears welling in my eyes. He stood from the table and paced back and forth.
"I just need some space, Eden."
Space? From me? The word seemed foreign to me. I loved Alex more than anything in the world and wanted to spend all my free time with him by my side. We had more than enough space when he traveled for games. Too much, really. I missed him terribly on the nights he was away. But I could do nothing but sit there and listen as Alex paced and told me about his feelings of missing out, of being tied down so young and not getting to sow his wild oats, talk of his teammates not inviting him out to a bachelor party because they thought of him as one half of an old married couple. His words were like daggers shoved into my chest. My heart ached and I was breathless. I latched on to words like young and single and something about us being too serious. I remembered the reputation he had as a ladies' man back in college, the kind of guy who didn't want to be tied down. Why hadn't I listened back then, been more careful not to give him my whole heart? Sobbing, I asked, "Did you ever love me?" Calm as ever, Alex met my eyes.
"I'm sorry."
And then he wheeled his still-packed carry-on out the front door and left. I dumped our dinner dishes into the sink, poured myself a glass of vodka, and drank it straight. It tasted awful and burned my throat, but I welcomed the bitter sting. Wasn't that what I deserved? To feel awful? I'd been so foolish, and now I felt broken. I curled up on the couch and cried for 2 days. My thoughts are interrupted by shouting on the ice. It's Alex and Price St. James, a guy normally known for making his teammates laugh. He's not laughing today, though. Scowling, he throws his stick on the ice in disgust. Well, that just happened. I take a breath. Now is not the time to reminisce about my breakup. Not that I want to relive the painful memories of the weeks that followed anyway.
"All right, that's enough for today. Hit the showers, boys."
Wilder calls out, pulling off his Kelly Green Titans cap and shoving one hand through his sweaty brown hair. When he turns toward me, the look in his eyes is one of pure desperation.
"Well, that was brutal,"
he says with a rough sigh.
"They're clunky as hell."
I've sat in on enough team meetings with the coaches to have developed a decent relationship with them, Wilder especially. Like me, he got his fair share of flack a year ago when he signed on as the youngest coach the team has had in decades. And while I hate to base our professional relationship on the fact that we've both been harassed by Boston sports fans, I have to count my allies where I can.
"They're blowing it,"
he mutters, looking out onto the ice.
"We've got a lot of talent, but it's being wasted right now."
I nod, watching as the players disappear down the chute toward the dressing room and out of earshot of this conversation. "Any particular guys giving you trouble?"
"Nah, it's the whole team,"
he grumbles.
"I know you don't want to hear it, but they're not on board with you as owner."
My lips pull into a tight frown as I step back, folding my arms over my chest. "I see." I try to pretend I'm unaffected, but shit, the truth stings. I figured my own team wouldn't be like those asshole reporters who question my every move. I love this team, but I guess it doesn't go both ways.
"It's not just you, though,"
Coach says.
"It's Braun, too. They haven't rallied around him as part of the team yet, and, well..."
He sweeps his hand through the air, gesturing toward the ice and slowly shaking his head.
"You saw for yourself how that's going. He's unstoppable, though. If they can find a way to click with him, with his grit, Braun could take this team all the way. He's distracted, on edge right now. But I know he'll be good again once the team's on board, probably. The hockey blogs aren't wrong about that."
My stomach turns inside out at the mention of the blogosphere. It's true. Alex Braun has been the talk of every sports podcast and fan site since we signed him a few weeks back. I can't scroll through my Twitter feed without seeing Boston's latest and greatest starting center, the 6-foot slapshot god the city is pinning their hopes and dreams on. If I'm the villain, he's poised to become the hero. As if it weren't enough to see my ex everywhere I look, I've also had to see my own face next to his. Despite our breakup, we're still a hot topic. Everyone has an opinion, and every opinion is the same. If Braun is anything short of being the team's savior this year, my mere presence is entirely to blame. But I doubt that will be an issue. If I learned one thing about Alex during the years we were together, it's that hockey will always be his first love. He's an athlete through and through, a competitor, and nothing will get between him and the game. Even our breakup or a trade to a new team that hasn't quite accepted him yet. Coach Wilder is right. Alex is unstoppable and will power through one way or another. I just hope for our team's sake that the bonding takes place sooner rather than later.
Maybe they should hear from you.
Coach shifts, looking at me now. When I open my mouth but don't respond, he tips his chin toward the dressing room.
They've got their reservations about you, but I think once they know you, once they know you're serious, they'll get their asses in gear.
I straighten, brushing a loose blonde strand back into my low bun and smoothing down my suit jacket. When I was named as owner, I sent an email to the entire staff and team introducing myself, letting them know I was ready for a great season. But maybe he's right. Maybe I need to make a personal introduction. Show them I'm serious about this team, even if I didn't plan to give a speech today. I'm game if you think it'll help, Coach Wilder.
Please, call me Wild. Everyone else does.
All right, Wild, I say. Lead the way. I follow him off the ice, racking my brain for the right words to motivate a failing hockey team. My failing hockey team. If we're going to have half a chance at the playoffs this year, these men need to clean up their act. Fast. We pad across the rubber floors to the locker room door, which Wild shoves open with both hands, hollering with a voice loud enough to make a tornado siren jealous.
Pants up, men, we got a lady present, team owner coming through.
I can't help but stiffen at the coach's word choice. While I appreciate him making sure the men are decent, I can't help but resent him calling me a lady first and team owner second. But I tuck my bitterness away for another time. I have a pep talk to give. As I pass through the door, the icy air gives way to a cocktail of sweat and men's deodorant. Our facilities are top of the line and maintained by an expert cleaning staff, but no amount of bleach can chase away the unique cologne of a professional hockey team after 2.5 hours of on-ice drills. But it's a smell I'm used to. It comforts me in some small way. I step carefully around the Titans logo on the floor, finding a spot close to the center amongst a line of half-dressed men. Half of them don't even bother looking my way. They're preoccupied with their gear, shoving helmets into cubbies and whipping practice uniforms into the laundry bin. But they're not the ones who bother me. What gets me is the other half, the ones who are staring me down like I'm the Grim Reaper. And in some ways, I might be. Because if these men can't grow a pair and accept me as their new team owner, it's going to be a death sentence for our season. Gentlemen, I dip my head in a quick nod as I scan the line of players, trying to make eye contact with each and every one, if only for a second. At the very end of the line, my gaze locks with a familiar set of ocean-colored eyes, their cutting gaze sending a shiver racing down my spine. Fresh from the shower, Alex Braun stands in front of me in nothing but a pair of athletic shorts that hang low on his trim waist, his fingers scratching absently at his bare chest. I can't help but steal a glance, checking the space on his left pec, right above his heart. My stomach deflates. He still has it. The dark shaded heart tattoo that he got for me, a surprise for my 25th birthday. My initials used to be tucked in the design somewhere, but I see that he's since gotten it filled in. The whole heart now as black as a hockey puck. He didn't even bother to leave any bare skin to hold another woman's name someday. I can't help but wonder if that was on purpose. I may have held his heart for a few years, but he's not the kind of man to be held down. Not by me, not by anyone. It took me a while to see that, but now it's as clear as day. When I finally drag my gaze away from Alex, my focus moves to the next face in the locker room, one that's every bit as familiar, although much less expected. Holt is standing in the corner near the back exit, his thick arms folded over his chest as he surveys the locker room with serious gray eyes. When he meets my gaze, his unhappy look fades. I didn't expect to see him here, and a jolt of electricity races through me. I was prepared to deal with one bit of romantic history today, not two, if you can even call what Holt and I had a romance. It was a one-night mistake, and I'm undecided if that's better or worse than the five-year mistake I made with Alex. Either way, seeing the two of them here together is unsettling. The man I chose, and the man I didn't. But guys like Holt Rossi have heartache written all over them. Back in college, I thought Alex was the safe choice. The golden boy, a fun-loving jock everyone adored. I'd wanted a little bit of fun, to break out of my shell and experience all that college had to offer. A hot fling, maybe something more. But I wasn't looking for love. Against all odds, that's what Alex and I found together. He said I wasn't like the other girls he'd dated. Well, the term dated is a generous one. Back then, Alex was known mostly for casual hookups. His few relationships had only lasted a couple of weeks, just long enough for him to get bored and move on to the next groupie. I guess I was the exception. I challenged him. We worked well together, for a while anyway. We weren't the best at communicating. Sharing with each other about our needs was never a strength. But then again, we were young, each other's first loves. I'd like to think I've learned a thing or two about myself since then. And now, with some age and perspective, I question if Alex was the safe choice at all. I know it's a waste of imagination, but my mind can't help but play out alternate versions of my past. Versions where I didn't run from Holt's bed and into Alex's arms. A version where I stayed with Holt and enjoyed his tenderness for a little longer. If I had, would I have spent those years by Holt's side? Would I still be there now? But there was nothing easy about being with Holt that night. The way he kissed knocked me over. It was like drowning, gasping for air, but not wanting to surface at the same time. His mouth was so hot and insistent, I could barely breathe. It was too much, but not enough at the same time. Like water brought to a boil, flooding me with relief and a hint of danger. But my complicated and confusing emotions fell by the wayside as I gave in to what my body wanted. And that night, I wanted him. The way Holt looked at me, I can still remember it. Gazing deep into my eyes as if to memorize their color. His fingertips skimming my skin like I was the most precious thing in the world. Snapping me out of the dangerous memory is Wilde's low voice.
Miss Wynne?
Wilde's rough chuckle brings me back to the moment where I'm face to face with 20 expectant men all waiting to hear what I have to say. Heat rushes to my cheeks. What has gotten into me? Here I am, dressed in my sharpest power suit, holding the attention of a professional hockey team, all of whom are in my employ. I should feel like I have the room in the palm of my hand. Instead, I'm caught up in my own ancient history and the two men who helped me write it. It's unprofessional, which is not the way I want to portray myself, ever. My hands start to tremble, so I form them into fists and cross my arms over my chest, gulping down my nerves and hoping whatever comes out of my mouth is half as eloquent as what my grandfather would have said at a time like this. You can do this, Eden. I know the team is hurting right now, I say, trying to steady my wavering voice. No one worse than me. Pete, my grandpa, was my mentor and my friend. I know many of you can say the same. But we can't let losing him turn into a losing season. It's not what he would want, and I sure as hell know it's not what you all want either. A few players nod in agreement, while others seem to find the floor more interesting. I clear my throat, demanding their attention, and clear as day, a snicker cuts through the locker room. There's no doubt in my head who the source is. My gaze briefly wanders toward him, confirming what I already suspected. A tight, smug smile is pulling at Alex Braun's lips, threatening to shrink my confidence to the size of the thin, icy shavings on the blades of his skates. I'll tell you what else my grandfather would have wanted, I say, my voice firmer now. For you to treat me with the same respect that you treated him. We need to rise above the drama and move forward. It's the only way this works. Briefly, I pause, weighing the wisdom of my next words. Fuck it. I'll be blunt. You guys looked like shit out there today, and I, for one, don't want our critics to be proven right this season. I'm going to work my ass off for this team. Are you? I scan the team, noting a couple of nods of agreement. It's a start. My door is always open, so if you have any suggestions, I'm all ears. Let's turn this around and make not only my grandpa proud, but each other. Having said my piece, I swivel on my heel, not allowing myself even a second to assess the team to see if anything I said stuck. Instead, I make a clean exit, letting my pumps carry me as fast as possible across the locker room floor. I don't even spare the extra steps to walk around the team logo this time. So what if it's bad luck? No amount of bad luck could be worse than what I already have. I rush toward the elevators, stabbing the call button as hard as I can. When the big silver doors part, I hurry inside, turning to jab the door close button. But before the doors can obey, I spot a tall, broad figure heading in my direction at a slow jog.
Hold the door,
Holt calls, his voice low and rich like caramel syrup being poured over chocolate ice cream. For half a second, I weigh my options. I could pretend not to hear him, let the elevator doors close, and finally be alone where I can fall apart without an audience. But something in me reacts instinctively. Against my better judgment, I extend one hand, keeping the doors open long enough for Holt to step in next to me. When I pull away, the doors slide closed, and then it's only him and me, truly alone for the first time since I fled his room my junior year. That was 6 years ago, and in that time, this man has only grown larger in every sense. He was always bigger than the other guys during his Sutton days, but the man standing beside me now is pure muscle. His company-branded black polo hugs his thick biceps, the fabric stretched across his broad chest. When he speaks, his deep voice fills every inch of the small space we share.
Are you okay?
He asks, his expression soft but serious. I can't hold his gaze without facing the uneven heartbeat thrumming in my chest, so I turn my focus to the elevator buttons instead and lie. I'm fine.
You don't seem fine.
Damn him for being so perceptive. My shoulders sink as I deflate, the weight of the last 10 minutes fully crashing down on me. Of all the people in the world, Holt Rossi is the furthest thing from my chosen shoulder to cry on. But he's here, and he's ready to listen. One more look into those smoky gray eyes, and my fragile heart opens up. It's all just a lot harder than I thought it would be, I whisper to the floor.
What is, having Braun here, or taking your grandfather's place?
I scoff, looking up to offer Holt a weak smile. All of the above. His eyes shift, deepening with a kindness I can't quite describe.
Understood. It's a tough job, I'm sure.
Grandpa left some big shoes to fill, I say, swallowing the tears needling my throat as I wish with all my heart that Grandpa Pete were here now.
And what about Braun?
Holt lifts one dark eyebrow, his head tilting with curiosity. What about him?
Do you still love him?
My heart leaps into my throat. Did he really just ask me that? I study the tiny crack between the elevator doors, wishing I could shrink down to nothing and slip out through that tiny space. But there's no escape. It's only Holt and me and the question no one else has had the courage to ask these past 6 months. No. I finally say, my voice soft but honest. I'll always care for him in my own way, but it's not love. Not anymore. Not even close. Holt nods, his full lips barely parting, like he's about to ask a follow-up question. But before he can say a word, the elevator settles at my floor, the doors easing open to allow for my escape. Well, this is me. I say as I step out, grateful for the abrupt ending to this mini press conference. My heels click against the white marble tile as I hurry down the hall toward my office, not even pausing to look over my shoulder. I've done enough looking back for today, and all it's earned me is more hurt and confusion than I've bargained for.
Chapter 6. Holt. So, you got it? Madden asks, grabbing a pair of 30-pound dumbbells from the weight rack. Huh? The contract, dumbass. You got it? Oh, right. Yeah. I smirk and help myself to a bottle of water from the mini-fridge in the training facility. Madden was the first employee I hired when I started my company. He's been with me for 4 years now, and we've grown from being mere boss and employee to being friends. Well, mostly workout partners, but occasionally drinking buddies, too. Today, though, our workout facility got an upgrade. Now that we're on the payroll of the Boston Titans, we have privileges at the same gym the players use. It's bougie as fuck, and I'm not complaining. There are clean towels and free bottled water. Locker rooms that don't smell like fungus and sweaty balls. Sign me the hell up. There's even a juice bar in the entry with shots of turmeric for inflammation, and ginger for immunity, I think. I'm sure it's all a bunch of shit, but hey, it's the little things. Sweet, because after seeing this gym, it would be really hard to go back to using that shithole in your building's basement. I chuckle. Tell me about it. Madden finishes his bicep curls and moves on to chest presses. So, the lady boss, Eden Wynn, what's she like? I raise one eyebrow at him. Lady boss, really, dude? He shrugs and drops the 30s at his feet. Sorry, disrespectful?
I lift my chin. Not if you didn't mean it to be.
I meant no disrespect. It's actually pretty cool what she's doing, making sure the team stays in the family, stepping up like that. Plus, a chick who likes hockey, that's just fucking cool. I watch as he changes out the 30s for 45s. He must be working on his back next. Yeah, she's cool. We've actually got a bit of history. Really? His voice lifts on the question. Shit, I shouldn't have said that. Of course Madden's going to want to know more. What do you mean by history? I pump out 15 reps, taking my time. I would do more, put off having to answer his question, but my shoulders are screaming at me. They're still sore from my workout 3 days ago. We met in college, freshman year, I think. Saw each other off and on after that. Had a couple of classes together. Shit, that's crazy. At Sutton, right? Yep. I grab my water bottle and take another long drink. She's hot as hell. I clench my teeth. That's beside the point. We don't sleep with clients, Mad. You know that, right? My tone is patronizing, but I don't give a shit. Yes, Eden is gorgeous, but Madden is a known player. I may have to rethink scheduling him to work alongside her. Or maybe I just won't take any days off for the next few months. That's always an option. I wonder if calling dibs would work. But Eden is a woman, not the last slice of cake at a birthday party. He grins at me and wiggles his eyebrows. Fucker. Yeah, I know that. No sleeping with the clients. As the boss, does this rule apply to me too? It's a dangerous thought, but Eden's single, and I'm very single. Shit, painfully so. It's been a long-ass time since I've had any company other than my right hand. But I can't think about that right now. Can't let myself wonder what it might be like to be with the grown-up version of Eden I met in her office. The suit-wearing, confident, badass lady boss calling the shots in a multi-million-dollar organization. Down, boy. When I look up, Madden is standing there staring at me. You don't have a thing for her, do you? I scoff. No. I never had a thing for her. Madden doesn't look convinced. After a long silence, he chuckles. Shit, you so did. Probably still do. As I said, she's hot as fuck, and she likes hockey. Playing hockey isn't some great noble profession. You know that, right? He chuckles and shakes his head. And security is? Shit, I need to stop talking. Next, he's going to see through my disdain for hockey, the very sport Eden's ex-boyfriend plays for a living. Smooth, dumbass. And don't even get me started on the way Alex looked at her in the locker room today. Forget about it, Mad. I'm over it. Eden and I are ancient history, so drop it, okay? Whatever you say, boss. He grins at me again. There's something about his playful grin that bothers me. Maybe it's because Eden seems so rattled after her locker room pep talk. I want to make things easier for her, not more difficult. I'm about done here. You? Madden asks, re-racking his weights. Yup, but we're not skipping leg day next week. Your calves are starting to look scrawny. I toss my damp towel at him. Once we finish our workout, Madden heads out, opting to shower at home while I plan to take advantage of the facilities here. It's probably better that he's gone. That way he won't see me order a ginger and turmeric shot and then use it as ammo to make fun of me for the next decade. This is a nice perk of working at the training facility. Even on my days off, I can come and use the gym here. A fancy-ass gym for the pro athletes. Never thought I'd be here, but I feel lucky to have landed the contract. Even some ribbing from my friend won't stop me from enjoying it. Listening to Madden call me out about my crush on Eden was more than a little uncomfortable. It's scary how close he got to discovering the truth, but I'll protect our secret to the grave. As far as I know, Eden never told anyone about our night together. About her night slumming it with me. I certainly never told a soul, but more than that, I got used to hiding that lost, vacant expression on my face whenever I spotted Eden and Braun together on campus. Got used to burying that hurt in my eyes. That look like someone kicked my puppy whenever they appeared together on the news. That month they moved to Toronto fucking crushed me. It was the spring after she graduated from Sutton. There was a rumor that Braun wanted her to drop out the last few weeks of her senior year. If she had, I would have hunted him down and castrated the bastard. Anyone could see how important Eden's education was to her. When I heard she graduated with honors, I felt proud, relieved. It was at least something she wouldn't compromise for him. But then they left for Canada, and I thought that was it. Thought he'd propose, that they'd get married and live happily ever after. I was convinced I'd lost her forever. But I couldn't admit that to Madden. It was stupid. Young love. But that can't be right. An infatuation, maybe. It couldn't be love. Then Braun fucked up in Canada, fought with his own team's goalie during a game, and was kicked off the team. He and Eden came back to the U.S., to Philadelphia briefly, then New York. Somehow, Braun still managed to end up with a multi-million-dollar contract. That was a hard pill to swallow. Although I had no right to, I mourned the loss of Eden, grieved like someone close to me had died. And my chances of ever being with a girl like her did die. Through that experience, I came to realize what was possible for a guy like me, and what wasn't. And being with a millionaire heiress to the Wynn fortune just wasn't going to happen. She'd made her choice, and I'd made my peace with it. But that didn't mean I wanted to fucking rehash it with Madden today. Keeping memories of Eden in my past is easier said than done. As much as I try to pretend I wasn't affected, she still gets under my skin. The scent of her shampoo, the way she sucks on her bottom lip when she's deep in thought, her bright-eyed determination. I love that she thinks she can run Boston's hockey empire with her sheer will. And that's the thing about Eden. Of course she can, and she will. She'll prove all her critics wrong, and I guess I'll be the guy with a front-row seat to it all. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. At least that's what I hear. I head toward the showers and select the one on the end. Thankfully, no one else is here today, so I have the place to myself. Cranking the water to hot, I push down my shorts and boxers and yank off my t-shirt. Stepping into the spray of water, I let out a sigh. I grab my body wash and lather up, washing my face, armpits, groin, all the important parts. Now that I'm alone, my thoughts return to Eden. Watching her take charge of the guys, giving that speech, hearing how composed and confident she sounded. My hand drifts down to my dick, and I give it a slow caress. I'm already half hard just from thinking about the way Eden looked in that suit. the way she commanded the attention of every guy in that room. She's a force to be reckoned with. Forget it. But it's not like I can ignore the rush of heat to my groin. I give the base of my cock a warning squeeze. Now's not the time, dude. Later, I promise myself. If I keep this up, things with Eden are bound to get complicated. I shut the door on my past. But maybe I can open it just a crack. Just long enough to peek inside, to see what I missed.
Chapter 7. Eden.
You're saving me one of those tortillas or I'm stabbing you.
My eyebrows dart up at the sight of our team captain pointing a plastic knife at one of the rookies. Wow. This is officially nothing like the elegant start-of-season banquets my grandfather used to host at his Victorian mansion in Cambridge. I wanted to keep the well-loved tradition alive by throwing a small dinner party at my condo for all the players and their plus ones. But this night is quickly turning into a mess. I ordered fajitas for 45 people from one of my favorite local restaurants. We have 20 players on our roster. Add in the plus ones that a few of the guys brought, and this should have been plenty of food. I guess I underestimated how much a professional hockey team can eat, or how much room these big guys can take up. Luckily, the guys aren't shy about being practically on top of one another. Personal space is non-existent in the hockey world, and after a few beers, no one thinks twice about three grown men piling onto a two-person love seat. As I wander through the kitchen collecting empty beer bottles, I'm warmed by the sound of comfortable chatter mixing with intermittent, deep, rumbling laughs from the living room. For the first time since Grandpa Pete passed away, I feel welcome here among the team. As I should, I suppose, because this is my home, after all. But baby steps. Need another beer, Reeves? I call out to our left-wing forward, who's leaning against my granite kitchen island, gripping a long-necked bottle that looks close to empty. He tips it toward me before draining what's left of it.
Oh, thanks, Miss Wynn. Too many of these, and I'll be about as useless at drills tomorrow as a donkey on skates.
I bite my tongue, holding back the very real truth that, based on what I saw on the ice the other day, a donkey on skates might prove to be an asset to the team. But Wilde assured me that yesterday's scrimmage ran way smoother than the on-ice practices leading up to it, which is a much-needed sliver of reassurance. Well, if you change your mind, the fridge is stocked. And call me Eden, I remind him with a soft smile. But while beer is in no short supply, I can't say as much for the food. After a quick sweep through the kitchen to stack the empty trays, I sneak off down the hall to place an emergency pizza order. If I'm going to avoid any accusations of trying to starve the team, we'll be needing some reinforcements. Just as I press the complete order button, my phone buzzes with an alert from the front desk, notifying me that I have more guests on their way up. When I tug the door open, standing outside is Price St. James, one of the defensemen who, like most of the players tonight, arrived with a six-pack of craft beer hanging in his grip. He hands it off to me, and I admire the colorful geometric design on the cans before thanking him with a polite smile. He's tall and broad-shouldered like all hockey players, but he's also got a quick smile and sparkling blue eyes. Everyone calls him Saint. I'm still getting used to the nickname thing. They all have one. He steps inside, shaking his head at me when I go to close the door behind him.
Hang on now, my plus one is just a few steps behind me.
I arch one curious brow, a smile tugging at the corner of my lips. I didn't know you had a girlfriend, Saint. Most of the guys on the team are single, a bit of information that the media loves to dwell on. Of all the players to be tied down, Price St. James seems like the least likely. When the tabloids aren't speculating which of the players I'll end up falling into bed with, they're posting pictures of Saint at the hottest Boston bars, surrounded by a new group of puck bunnies each weekend. And I guess those pictures aren't doctored, because my mere suggestion of his significant other makes him snicker into his fist, and a familiar chuckle agrees from down the hall. My fingernails instinctually dig into the soft skin of my palms. I know that laugh all too well. It's Alex, the only member of the team I was hoping would pass on the invite to this dinner. Anxiety builds in my throat. I should have known that the two biggest players on the team would buddy up, but just knowing that my ex has made a friend on the team leaves me feeling uneasy. It's a catch-22. On one hand, I want everyone to think of Alex as poorly as I do. On the other hand, if they don't rally around their newest teammate, we're doomed for the season. Either way, my stomach starts churning the second he steps up to the door. I instantly recognize the six-pack tucked beneath his arm. It's the same hoppy sour we used to keep our fridge stocked with. His favorite. Personally, just the smell always nauseated me. Of course, that's what he chose to bring.
The day Saints got a girlfriend will be a cold day in hell,
Alex says, shooting me a wink that gives me an instant wave of nerves. Based on the way these two are laughing like old friends, I'd say the team is starting to accept Alex as one of their own. Now if I can just get them to do the same for me.
Or maybe a hot day on the rink.
Saint claps Alex on the back.
Whichever comes first. Hey, he's not so bad, Saint.
Lucien Bissette, our goalie, hollers from the couch in his thick French accent. He has one muscular arm wrapped around his slender blonde wife, who smiles as she sips daintily from a can of sparkling lemon water.
When you have a wife, there is always someone to be, how you call, Didi?
Saint frowns, his dark brows scrunching together as he tries to interpret.
Didi? I thought your wife's name was Camille.
Lucien mimes, turning an invisible steering wheel, then motions toward his half-empty beer resting on the glass coffee table.
You know, tonight, she's my Didi.
Saint's blue eyes brighten with a flicker of recognition.
Oh, you mean DD, the designated driver.
He doubles over with laughter, then crosses over to the couch to slap his hand against Lucien's.
Damn, I was gonna say, man, whoever this girl DD is, can I have her number? She sounds fucking hot.
Language, Saint? Camille says, frowning.
My bad.
Saint laughs, lifting his hands in surrender.
What I meant to say is she sounds fucking pretty. Is that better?
As the players laugh, Camille rolls her eyes, but she doesn't bother pushing the argument any further. It's not worth it, especially with Saint. Despite his nickname, everything about this man screams sinner.
What about you, Wild? How's the single life treating you?
Saint asks, tilting his chin toward Coach. Wild winces at the question, slowly shaking his head as he gulps what's left of his beer. From what I understand, he and his ex-wife finalized their divorce in the spring, right around the time Alex and I broke things off. There must have been something in the air.
I'm not taking questions on the subject,
he finally says gruffly.
Why don't you bug the rookie about it instead? He's the one who's been glued to the dating apps half the night.
Tate nearly leaps out of his own skin at that comment, shoving his phone into his back pocket before he can be caught in the act.
Attaboy, rookie.
Saint cackles, clapping Tate on the shoulder.
Get yourself some action.
Tate rolls his eyes, then his gaze bounces between Wild and me.
I'm just swiping.
He mutters, his cheeks turning the slightest shade of pink.
I'll get off my phone, I promise. This isn't math class, Tate.
Wild laughs.
Do what you want. Just don't come crying to me when you catch something that you need a prescription for.
Camille, how are you and Lucien enjoying Boston? I ask,